This is Talking Heads, and this hour of the programme we're continuing our coverage of the build-up to September's general election. And today we're joined in the studio by Liberal Vanning candidate for Douglas South, Kate Beecroft. Good afternoon, Kate, and welcome to Talking Heads.
Good afternoon, Stu. Thank you for having me on your programme.
Well, it's a lot of the people that we're talking to as part of our election build-up are first-time people who I've not met before. You and I have got some history, though. We've done this before, haven't we?
Yeah, I was terrified the first time. I know what they're feeling. I'm not much better now, but I'm not quite as scared as I was.
Is this your third go at standing for the House of Keys?
Yeah.
Okay, and how close did you get last time? Did you
Second to Chris Robertshaw, yes.
Yes.
So I didn't feel embarrassed.
And this is also your third constituency, isn't it?
It is.
Because some people feel that you've got to live and work in the constituency that you want to represent. You obviously don't.
Well, I think Douglas East by-election actually proves that you don't, because Chris Robertshaw was first, I was second, and neither of us lived in the constituency.
Yeah.
I think you have to live sort of reasonably close to be aware of the local issues. But the main reason people are voting for you is that you're national politicians.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And I feel very flattered, actually, that Liberal Vanning have the confidence in me to have actually selected me three times.
Well, and you've been quite involved in the Lib Van party with Pete, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, very much so. I enjoy it enormously.
What is it about the Liberal Vanning party that appeals to you?
I think it's about trying to change things for the better for the future. I mean, sort of a few years ago, you sort of think, oh, gosh, I'm not really sure. I like the way things are going. And then you think, ooh, I really don't like the way things are going.
Yeah.
And then Peter launched the new party. And I actually went along just for the skeet to see what he was up to.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, you know, this is the first time I feel I can actually make a difference. Because on my own, I knew I couldn't have done it.
Well, really, because the Isle of Man is very proud of the fact that everybody stands as an independent rather than, you know, we don't really have party politics as such.
Well, you do. No, hang on, you do. Everyone stands as independents, but it's a coalition that's formed after the election that still pretend they're independents.
The one-party state by patronage.
Well, exactly. Well, it's certainly a one-party state. Patronage, I would say, is up to the individuals as to their motivations, but the collective responsibility code that they sign afterwards, it definitely, I mean, that's more draconian than any of our rules, if you like. We don't have to sign something like that to say that we've got to lie about how we voted, for goodness sake.
So you felt that you could do more if you were part of a party like the Liberal Vanning than you could do alone?
Well, definitely, because if we get a lot of people in, they're all elected on the same mandate. And if something happens to one of those elected people, the policies don't die, they continue. That's the whole thing about a party. You've got continuity. You can actually plan for 10, 15, 20 years down the line, because it's not just a five-year term that you look at.
Double-edged sword, of course, because Peter Caron is hugely popular in Onchan. Clearly, he's got lots and lots of supporters, but there are lots of people also who think that he's not a particularly good politician.
But this isn't
he's just
about
trouble.
Peter Caron.
But it's his party, isn't it?
No, it isn't his party. He's the leader of the party. He's our only parliamentarian now at the moment, because we lost one. So, obviously, it's in our constitution. If we've got somebody in parliament, and that they have to be the leader. But if five or six of us get in, there's going to be a leadership contest after the election at some point.
And do you think that's likely, five or six people?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Yes, I certainly do. I certainly do. People that, well, when I'm going out canvassing and the feedback I'm getting from the other candidates is certainly very, very positive. People are beginning to understand what we're about, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve, and it is for the better of the Isle of Man to do it.
But the fact is that so far you've had a position of Liberal Vanning members won't stand as part of government. So if you are elected, then you'd be a backbencher for 5 years. What good could
Unless,
you do with that?
No. We've never said we won't be part of government. We've said until we can influence government policy that we won't take government positions. And I think that's quite right.
Yeah.
And we've all signed up to that.
So if four or five of you get in, you would?
We would stay as backbenchers with four or five.
You would?
Yeah. Well, we've not set a number on it. It depends who gets in, who the other people are. This is going to be a party judgment after the election as to whether we've got sufficient in to make a difference from the inside. Because unless you get enough in to make a difference from the inside, you're just going to get squished.
But wouldn't you concede the fact that, you know, if you've got four or five LibVan members in the Keys as of September, and they're all effectively backbenchers who are there to keep an eye on what's happening as far as Goodman's concerned, that you're not really adding much to it?
Oh, I think you're adding an awful lot. I would like to see a statutory minimum of MHKs not allowed to take a government position, because at the moment you haven't got democracy. It actually brought it home to me when a few of us went over to the Alliance Party conference in Northern Ireland, and they were talking about the enforced power sharing over there.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they have to have it because they're trying to stop the Troubles, but they were saying this cannot continue because we've lost our democracy. We've got less than 3% of our elected representatives who are outside of government. We haven't got democracy. And it was like a light went on in my head, and I thought, we haven't even got that many, because at the time Peter was the only one.
Yeah.
And I thought, if they don't think they've got democracy, then we definitely haven't.
You alluded to the fact that there were two MHKs who were Liberal Vanin members.
Mm.
Are you standing particularly in South Douglas to have a go at Bill Mullarky's seat?
Not at all. I've read the papers as well as you have. It is not a vendetta. The people of Douglas South voted for Liberal Vanin last time. They've got to be given the chance to do so again. And I'd say I'm just very flattered the party selected me to be their representative in that area.
And I think that the regulations have been tightened up within the party, so if you are elected on the LibVan ticket this time, you can't effectively sort of bow out of it, can you?
No, you can't. We've grown up a little bit, and we've all signed an agreement to that effect, so there can be no, shall we say, confusion after an election.
Confusion, that's a good word.
Well, I'm training to be a politician.
Yes, good work as well. Well, tell us a little bit about your journey then, as part of your training to be a politician. Tell us about your background.
Well, as you know, I stood in 2006 in Middle. I was then elected as a Liberal Vanin onto Braddon Commissioners in 2007. 18 months ago, I stood in the Douglas East by-election. And now I'm standing in Douglas South.
Yeah. And you're a businesswoman as well, I think, with your husband, aren't you?
That's right, yes. Yes.
What sort of business are you into?
Am I allowed to say the name? I don't want to be publicising.
Yeah. Go on.
Okay, we've got Manx Cleaners and Manx Home Care.
Yeah. That's £18, please, for the plug.
Listen, you guys get enough out of our company.
So you've got, you've got obviously an interest in politics, and you're actively involved in politics at a local authority level so far. Do you think that that's important in terms of standing for Keys, that you've got some sort of a background in local authority?
Not politics? Necessarily, but having said that, I think that, if you like, my unique selling point in this election is that there is no doubt whatsoever that there's going to be hard decisions that have to be made in the future. Cuts are going to have to be made. Efficiency, savings, cut the fat, whatever you like to call it, it's going to have to be done. And I have had that experience working as a team with Braddon Commissioners, because when I was first elected, a few months later, we suddenly found that far from having healthy finances, we had a 250,000 deficit.
Yeah.
That was a little bit of a shock.
I bet.
But we've actually managed, we've worked very, very hard, and we've turned it round that we now have more than 250,000 surplus. We haven't increased the rates for the last 3 years. Services haven't been cut. So, you know, it's proven you can do it. And I would love to be part of the Liberal Vanin team that can bring about that positive change for the Isle of Man, because that's what's needed.
And that's what's going to have to happen as of September. I mean, if you are elected, you're going to have a huge job on your hands, aren't you?
Oh, definitely. I think Jim Watterson was quoted as saying it's going to be a lousy time in politics.
Yeah.
Well, it is, unless you've got a positive vision of how it can go forward. And if I just thought it was all doom and gloom, I wouldn't particularly want him to be standing. You've got to have a vision of where you want to take the Isle of Man. And I think, actually, that in a funny way, it could be a very good thing for what's happened to us in the Isle of Man, because we now have the chance to reinvent ourselves, if you like, and build on firm foundations, not sort of shifting sand that's reliant on other people. Get proper structures in place, get proper businesses over here that generate employment, And that is a firm basis. It's building your foundations on concrete rather than sand that's out of your control.
Do you think we've had had it too good for too long, that there's been too much fat allowed to grow
up
around government?
Yes, I do.
So this could be it could almost force us to take the decisions that shouldn't maybe mean taking some time.
I think
ahead.
It's sad that they weren't looking at fat all these years, because we could have rather nice surpluses built up had they done so. But I think this is the problem. You don't get things run with... It's not saying that you have to be... Everything has to be corporate. I'm not saying that at all. But financial decisions within government, you have to look at basic business practice, for goodness sake. You've got to apply the same principles. I'm not saying that you need to know the cost of everything and the value of nothing, because a lot of it is the services the quality of the services that you provide to the people of the Isle of Man as well. But how you spend that money to achieve those services has to be looked at in a more professional manner.
I have no inside knowledge at all, but it struck me over the past couple of years that maybe we couldn't really build up too big a reserve, because it would draw attention to us. You know, if we have been... I think that the Isle of Man government over the last 20 years has been very creative in terms of getting every penny out of the UK that it could.
Well, I think if you say that you couldn't build up reserves because you're not going to draw attention to yourself, I think the fact that they were boasting quite publicly and internationally about how well we were doing...
I wonder if that's part of the problem.
It
could
well
be. Hosting dinners down in London and... For all the dignitaries and telling them how well we did.
Well, if I didn't want somebody to know that, I wouldn't be doing that.
Well, yes, but you can see that, you know, maybe that's why people haven't been that bothered about massive overspends on governments and on IRIS and on prison.
I'm sorry, that's
no
excuse. It's public money. It belongs to the public. And the fact that we don't even have a Freedom of Information Act to know how they're spending it, something that was promised and promised and promised... I mean, that just gets me so cross. And this thing that we're all in it together.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I was reading that Bear report over the weekend and my office was like a sauna. That is just so double standard to pretend that they're doing all these cuts, when actually the Public Accounts Committee report, which was excellent, by the way, it was very, very detailed, very well prepared, has shown that they were actually budgeting to increase their spending and increase their headcount.
Yeah.
So where is the cuts going to come from? Frontline services, there's nothing else left.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that they've been saying. Oh, we've got to protect our vulnerable. Oh, we're a caring government. I'm sorry, I need to think of some words to put it politely at this point.
Well, come September, it's going to be a whole new government, isn't it? I mean, that's the whole point.
Oh, I do hope so.
Well, I would have thought, not completely new, maybe, but it is going to be a new government, probably with a new chief minister. And so it'll be a whole new set of challenges as well. What part would you like to see the Liberal Valiants play in that?
Depends how many we get in.
Mm.
I mean, I would love to be in a position to form government. Oh, gosh, what a lot of good we could do then. That would be such fun. I tell you what, it really would, because it would be so... Of course you could.
Well, because you're not going to inherit a country that's got lots of money swilling around in the
system.
No,
but you don't need to. Like, I think you've got to bring it back to sort of basic principles. If you've got an income, on a personal level I'm talking about, if you've got an income and it's doing very, very nicely, you're getting promotions, blah, 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 and you're thinking, I'm going to have a wonderful Caribbean cruise next year.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you find out, uh-oh, my salary's frozen, it's gone down, inflation's gone up. You're going to rethink about having that Caribbean cruise. And if you think you might get made redundant, you're going to look at all the other areas where you can cut down. You're going to think, do I need to get a second job? You've got to balance your own budget.
Yeah, so it really is down to all of us, in a way, to do that, to cut our cloth according to our means.
Of course it is.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.
Our studio guest is Kate Beecroft, who's standing as a Liberal Vanning candidate for Douglas South in the elections in September. We've talked about the Liberal Vanning Party's part in the new government, depending on how many people that you get in. What about you personally? What strengths do you think you would bring to South Douglas and to the Isle of Man government?
Oh, gosh, on a personal level, are you sort of talking about what political things rock my boat, as it were? What are you saying?
Well, kind of. What strengths do you think you've got that would be useful to us in Tynwald?
Are you
a questioner? Are you somebody who can come up with policies? Are you a blue sky thinker? Are you a detail person?
I think more than anything, I'm a caring person. I mean, the reciprocal health agreement really, really, it just struck me to the core about how bad this would be for the Isle of Man,
yeah.
The people that it would affect if it was allowed just to die as government wanted. It's those sort of things that really, really stir me, if you like.
You
and I worked so hard at that. And I think for one of the few times in the history of the last few governments, we actually got a unanimous vote for that travel levy bill. It wasn't needed at the end of the day, but I certainly think it helped to, shall we say, get government to revisit it, along with all the other excellent work that the likes of Steve Roden was doing with Andrew McKinley and Brenda Cannell and all the rest of it. They were pushing in one way, but we were putting a plan B, because you've got to have contingency planning. You've got to have plan Bs for if things go wrong, and they did not have one.
You say that the government effectively wanted the reciprocal health agreement to die. Do you believe that? Do you think that the government wanted to just save money by it, and that was why nobody fought the...
My personal belief is, yes, it was. I mean, otherwise, why would Eddie Tier have tried to scupper our presentation to Tynwald members over it?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just arrogance and disgraceful in the extreme, in my book. We had a sensible plan B. If the people didn't want it, if Tynwald didn't want it, if the House of Keys didn't want it, that was fine. But don't try and stop democracy and allow a private member to make a presentation on an alternative.
Mm. All right, so looking forward then to September, we've got the election, we've got a new government, or a refreshed government anyway, and we know what the challenges are, really, certainly in terms of the loss of revenue so far. What other challenges do we face, do you think?
Oh, gosh, where do you start?
What about things like the OECD and the 010? Do those things keep you awake at night?
They don't keep me awake at night. We have another person in the party who spends his time at night thinking about them, thank goodness.
You've got a nominated insomniac in the party.
Yes, we do. I mean, yes, I know that they're very serious issues. I think our finance sector, we have to do everything we can to protect it.
Mm.
I want more diversification because I don't want all our eggs in the one basket. I mean, we have diversified to a certain extent over the last few years, but not enough.
Where would we go? Where would we diversify further? Because it's a great thing to say, oh, what we need is more diversification.
We've got so many ideas. This is what I'm saying. We've got a lot of ideas for diversification. There's no one big idea.
Right.
You're not going to find a big idea like the finance sector to replace the lost revenue.
Yeah.
You've got to have true diversification.
So
as
films,
in lots and
aircraft
lots.
Aircraft register, super yacht registry.
I think we'll leave the film industry to one side till after the debate in Tynwald this afternoon and before I get cross again. I think you need... We have got an awful lot of ideas for diversification. One of the ideas that I haven't had time to look at more, but I seriously want to get back to, and it sounds completely off the wall, we have some more substantial ideas than this particular one of mine, I might add, is about bees.
Mm-hmm.
There is a world shortage of bees because of the Varroa virus.
Oh, yeah.
We are Varroa virus free on the Isle of Man. I would like to see if there's a way that we can... I mean, everyone knows you've got the heather honey from Scotland and all the rest of it. We've got a lot of heather here. As I say, I haven't had time to investigate this, so this
sounds like a stroke of genius. So there's a shortage of bees.
Either that or
the
totally
world.
Loopy.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
could be. But
yeah.
they are in America and England. They're actually moving bees and hiring bees out for pollination,
yeah.
because without pollination, you lose a huge amount of the world's food. If we can protect our bees here and not allow tainted imports to come in and actually breed them here for resale or transport or whatever,
yeah.
that would be a viable little industry. As I say, it's something I need to talk to some more people about it to see if it has legs.
Ideally.
Well, yes, I've talked to a few of those, but I need a bit more.
And you've got the right name for the job as well. Yeah, Kate Beecroft,
Gosh,
Minister
do you know,
of Bees.
I never thought of that one.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm
sure you
no,
did.
No, I didn't, honestly.
Where do you see the divide between an MHK's job? Do you think that it's important to be a good constituency person, or do you think that people need to be looking more at the national stage?
I think it's important to have both qualities. You need to have a constituency MHK that you can go to if you've got a problem.
But do people do that too often? Shouldn't they go to the commissioners if they've got holes in the road or if they've got, you know, problems with neighbours?
Yeah, but there's other problems. I mean, even if they go to their MHK and say, look, you actually need to approach your local commissioners first with this. This is their role. Mm. You need to have somebody in the community that you can talk to, somebody that you know and you can sort of go to them. Whatever your whether it's education, health, whatever. Even if it's only, because most people don't know the difference between local and national politicians yes. over here anyway. They don't know how to, if they've got a problem at school, who do they go to? You're acting as a conduit, if you like, to sort of point them in the right direction in a lot of the time.
Yeah. You said earlier on that you're a caring person. That's a bit warm and fuzzy and political, isn't it? So if we've got to save £200 million a year in public funding, mm-hmm. where's it going to happen? Are you
well, I can
be...
tell you where it wouldn't happen.
Go on.
It would not happen to affect our sick people. I'm not just referring to the hospital. You've got all the community services. It would not affect our elderly. Those are the two things that are untouchable yeah. in my book.
So, I mean, you'd have to be cutting those. Services would have to be cut.
No, I don't think... I'm not necessarily... Until we know the full facts... You can't know the full facts till you're in there. Until you know that, you cannot actually say whether services would have to be cut or whether it's the management of those services.
Oh, well, I mean, we've lost a third of our annual income, haven't we?
If you take just the hospital, I think the figures are something... Oh, sorry, no, it's education. I'm getting those ones mixed up. Education, there's 46% of the people who work in education are not in the teaching role.
Right.
I think it's either that or the other way around, 46-54. Yeah. But it's a huge percentage. Now, I'm
so
not saying
we've got
that's
too many
not
administrators
necessary. I'm saying I'd like to have a look at it.
Yes.
Before you cut services, you look at what else you can cut. Services are the last thing.
Where do you think we've got fat in the system?
Again, I would say it's probably in the management structures. But again, I would like to get in there and have a look and see.
Can you not do that, though, as an outsider, somebody who's not elected? Is it really going to open up that many doors for you being elected?
Well, I mean, how can I do it as an outsider?
Well, freedom of information that we've not got. But.
Well, I think you've just answered your own question there.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And what about MHK's pay? Do you think the salary is right for MHKs? Do you think they deserve
God,
more, or do you think they're overpaid?
This is such a hot potato, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've actually got two... I've got one sort of firmish view on this. And that is, I would like to see... I've already said I'd like a statutory number of MHKs, not allowed government roles. I would actually quite like to see all MHKs and ministers and everybody else on the same salary.
Yeah.
If you want to be a minister, you're doing it because you want to serve the public, not because you want to get extra for doing it.
Isn't my that
other,
just...
Hang on. My other idea... Well, it's not my idea. It's one that was suggested to me, which is really blue sky thinking yeah. and out of the box. But I can see some merit in it. I can see a lot of problems in actually sorting the nitty-gritty out, is that there's a lot of people saying you're only going in it to be on the gravy train.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of cases that is very unfair, but I can quite see why people say it. So supposing you're on 30,000 now, why are you actually worth more the next day?
Mm.
You're still the same person, you've still got the same qualities, you've actually done nothing as a politician. So the suggestion that was put to me, that, as I say, I think it's quite good, is that everybody stays on whatever they were, maximum.
Yes.
You can choose to take less than you were on. But if you were on 30,000, the maximum you can earn when you suddenly become an MHK is 30,000. If you were on 70,000, the maximum you can earn is 70,000.
Yeah, but that means that you're going to get some people who've been bank managers or whatever on 200 grand a year earning that as MHKs.
Well, no, they could take them. As I say, if they were earning 200,000,
yeah.
They could declare that they were earning 200,000 and say, this is a salary I would be on if I was an MHK.
Yeah.
They might not want to do that, in which case they could say, well, actually, I've got to a time in my life, I'm quite happy to do this for 50 grand. That would be their choice, but the maximum you could earn would be that. But people would actually know this when they're voting for you.
Yes.
How much is it going to cost me to vote for somebody? You could have somebody who's on 16,000. That is actually really, really not bad at all. And somebody who's going to be on 70,000,
yes.
who's that little bit better, but not that much better to warrant it. And it would be giving the people the choice back as to whether they wanted this person on 16. It would also take the thing away that you got in it for the gravy train, because you're certainly not at that point. And it would also take away the fact that you cannot afford to get out of politics because you can't afford that step back down again.
And what about the MHK's pensions? What do you think about that? Do you think that...
I think it's an absolute disgrace that they're not contributing.
Yes.
Talk about share the pain.
And that's where it's got to start, isn't it?
Of course it is. You've got to lead by example.
Yeah, I quite like the idea of that people earn what they're earning before they get into politics, but I can see an awful lot of flaws in it as well.
There's a lot of deep... But as a basic idea...
And the worry about a lot of these things is that, you know, it would encourage maybe people who've got independent means to be the only people who stand for government, and that would be wrong, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes, you don't want the man in the street not being... But then why should somebody who's on a lower wage...
Yes.
If they're actually doing it because they want to serve the Isle of Man and want to do some good, even if it's just for the first term. If they get re-elected, they've proved themselves, they've proved people want them, then it's a different ballgame for your second term of office.
Now the idea's got legs. We're out of time, but Kate Beecroft, it's been fantastic talking to you. I've really enjoyed this today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too.
I'm sure we'll talk again before September. Thank you.